Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
The information that we have now, it does not say that it's racially motivated. That's still an active investigation. But as a chief of police, I do recognize the racial components of this case. I do recognize and understand the community's concern.
Are we going to start tolerating if it's a black citizen that you can shoot them and then go home and sleep in your bed at night after the police question you? It is unacceptable.
That's Kansas City Police Chief Stacey Graves and Civil Rights Attorney Benjamin Crump yesterday commenting on the shooting of black teenager Ralph Yarl. An 84-year-old white homeowner was accused of shooting him after Yarl went to the wrong house to pick up his twin siblings. We've been here before, 10 years ago. 19-year-old Renisha McBride was shot to death when she knocked on the door of a man looking for help after she had a car accident. Theodore Wafer, who is white, shot her with a shotgun. What's going on? Is it unsafe just to be black in America? We are talking about it tonight. My guests are journalist Nikki Mayo, editor-at-large for Black Women Unmuted, and Dr. Niambi Carter, associate professor in the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland and author of American While Black, African Americans, Immigration, and the Limits of Citizenship. I want to talk to you tonight. What do you think? What is going on right now? Is it just dangerous to be black in America in 2023? Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Carter and Nikki, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Dr. Carter, is this an I told you so? I mean, your book seems to say it all.
I don't know if it's an I told you so. It's just further confirmation of what we already know. I think America loves to gaslight black people and tell us we're crazy for feeling the way we feel, for saying things like Black Lives Matter and telling us that that's not important or it's unnecessary, when we know absolutely our lives are endangered from doing the most mundane things. Here we have this young boy going to pick up his siblings, and a simple, this isn't the right house, would have cleared this up. And instead, he gets a bullet to the head and another one to another part of his body and has to flee for his life. So I think when you are talking about this case or any other, America has a very long history of letting black people know that their skin is the crime and that they can be punished just for living in their skin with death, with jail, with beating, with disrespect. So I think we focus on the most spectacular events, like a murder, like a shooting, but it comes in all forms.
Yeah. You know, Nikki, how long have you been a journalist now?
Since 2001.
Since 2001. So we're talking more than 20 years. Me, a little bit longer. But, you know, you and I were cut from the same cloth. How many doors have you knocked on?
Too many. And I have heard gun cocked before when I've gone to houses as well. So this is very real. And at least with a reporter, you have a marked car typically. And they can see out the window that you're coming from somebody's news station. But still, they didn't care. I mean, I'm still black. So I know in Tennessee is where most of the, I could hear guns behind the door. I had two incidents where I had that happen to me in Northeast Tennessee near Southwestern Virginia. So it's real and it's scary. And I can't imagine a teenager, as a person that also taught high school, I can't imagine a 16-year-old knowing what to do. It probably was a fright or flight moment for Ralph when that door open and this elderly man is pointing a gun at him.
Well,
hold on.
Let's talk about the facts, because the reporting is that he rang the doorbell, but the door didn't. He was shot through the glass.
Yeah. They still see each other. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, certainly barely had time to react. And, you know, we're, from all accounts, we're talking about a great kid, you know, honor student, college bound, loved by his peers, loved by his parents, you know, the whole nine. This was not someone, and we've seen the photographs of him as well. This is not someone who, at least to us in this conversation, looked dangerous. And let's be clear. This happened in Clay County, Missouri, which is a northern suburb of Kansas City, Missouri. I used to live in Clay County. Okay. Very white, very quiet. But they're black folks in Clay County. That was 20 years ago, certainly. But still, go ahead.
No, but I was going to say, to your point, Harold, the fact that this kid is black was the danger.
Right.
It shouldn't matter whether he was a good kid or a great kid or a not so good kid. Nobody deserved to get shot. And when you were talking about the fact, the one thing I kept thinking was, thank God for the glass, because it probably slowed the bullet down enough that first shot wasn't fatal. And thankfully so, because we would have lost out on this great kid. His family would not be able to hold him tonight. But I feel two ways. Of course, it's like, gosh, this kid's a musician and all these things, a responsible older brother even. But the fact that we have to always say that and preface it, because we're trying to always prove our humanity to people who don't see it. All this man saw was a black kid. And they didn't speak. Nothing was said. The kid wasn't trying to come in his home or open the door or anything that would suggest that this man was in danger other than being young and black. And we also know that we age our children. So even when our children are 8 or 9 years old, people see them as adults and ascribe all of these adult-like qualities to them. We do it ourselves, but certainly outside community members do it as well. And, you know, it's so maddening that we often have to just say that for this kid to receive a modicum of justice, for this family to receive a modicum of justice, we have to go down the list of accomplishments for this kid. Because even if he was an average C student who got in trouble a little bit, who may have been suspended from school, he should not have been shot in the head for making the mistake of ringing the address that he thought. I mean, their addresses were so similar.
Oh, absolutely.
And they were, you know, like behind each other.
Exactly. That was
like
my
right,
old address.
Right behind each other.
It was a place in a street with the same name, the same exact numbers. We live in D.C. That happens all the time. And to think that somebody would shoot someone just for...
Can we talk about his humanity being questioned, though? Because that really was... If you talk about his injuries and how many houses he had to go to before somebody helped him.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was just so heartbreaking. The fact that he got shot in his upper frontal left lobe. He got shot in the head, people. Then he also got shot in his arm. And he went to 3 houses before someone would help him. And even when he got to that 3rd house, he had to put his hands up as if he was not already bleeding. Like, you know, all of this is happening. And this is a 16-year-old kid, whether or not they want to acknowledge him as a child or not. His humanity was not even remotely respected at all throughout that entire, like, I don't even know what friend or where he was going to get these kids from. But it's one of those things where I remember growing up and being told, you know, certain neighborhoods we're just not going to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but these two addresses were literally in the same neighborhood. They were one block away. And obviously his mother telling him that this is where he needed to be, this is where his brothers were, she thought it was safe. Would one block over have been, you know, less safe? You know, this is, again, he was just doing what he was told. How many times those of us, you know, with younger siblings, you know, I have a younger sister. Hey, look, go over here and pick up your sister. Just do what you're told. Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are asking tonight, is it dangerous just to be black in America? This coming on the heels of the shooting of Missouri teenager Ralph Yarrell by an 84-year-old white homeowner who shot him after Yarrell went to the wrong house to pick up his twin siblings. But there are other issues also in the news, and there have been so many shootings that we've been dealing with, and issues around shootings related to black people. It is head spinning, Nikki. This situation in Dadeville, Alabama, population 3,200. You're talking about a town where everybody knows everyone. A Sweet 16 celebration, black family, black friends, and four young black people shot to death. There hasn't been an arrest yet. The police there say that they have good leads, but they want people, you know, to come forward. This is, again, we don't know who is behind this shooting, but again, you know, four black people dead and more than two dozen wounded.
I mean, it's a tragedy. I mean, I think that was one of the things that's so galling about that one. That was an event any of us have been to, you know, either as 16-year-olds or as family members of 16-year-olds. I mean, my niece just celebrated her 16th birthday, and my heart breaks for that family because I'm sure they are feeling a level of responsibility that is, you know, that they could not have saved anyone there, or they're certainly not responsible for the violence. But you can't help but feel responsible because it was your gathering that, you know, these young people lost their lives at. And, you know, I think what's even, you know, more upsetting is that it is quite likely a member of our community that might have done this. And in which case, we are also going to have to ask that same community to do something they likely don't want to do, which is report these people to authorities. And we have every reason to distrust the legal system in this country. I can't even call it a criminal justice system. But in this case, that's what we have. And these people have to be held responsible. But I think this is also a larger question about the guns in our country. Our country is awash in guns. There's estimated 400 and some odd million guns in this country, and that's probably an undercount. Mm-hmm. So every man, woman, and child in America could have a weapon. That should make us all afraid. In places like Alabama, where it's so easy to have access to firearms, we should all be talking about these kinds of events just the way we talk about Uvalde and Sandy Hook and Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. These mass shootings are a problem everywhere.
Yeah. We've had 132 mass shootings as of March 27th. That's according to the Gun Violence Archive. It is really difficult to, like, put your mind around the fact that you had more mass shootings than days in the year. And that is our reality, seriously. It's really getting sickening. And every time we try to have a common sense gun reform conversation, you get hit with what's going to stop a bad guy with a gun, a good guy with a gun.
Right.
I'm having a hard time believing that in a place like Alabama, no one else in that party had a gun to possibly fight back. It's just the fact that this is an area that was, they were having fun. It was a party, and the innocence was broken. And, you know, just think about the fact that, you know, as of April 10th, we had 11,500 people die from gun violence in this country.
Yeah.
This is too much.
202.
We need to really start wrapping our minds around that, these numbers.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tonight, we are talking about being black in America. Is it unsafe just to be black in America? Let me go to Teresa. Teresa, thanks for calling. Calling from Virginia. What's on your mind?
Hi, Harold.
Hi.
You know, I've been having this conversation with my friends. I'm just exhausted. I mean, I love our country, and I want to stay here and help build it. But it's exhausting being black in America. There are times that I want to just say, deuces, I'm out. And I just don't know. I mean, when you see this little boy, this young man, 16 years old, I mean, I'm just exhausted. And I know that there are other people. And then, you try to take one for the team. It's just exhausting. Even when you go out to eat and you tip because you just, You want to take one for the team because you just want to make sure that, okay, they have this perception of us Black people. Everything we do, is to, I don't know. It's just exhausting. That's the only comment I wanted to make. And I love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Teresa. I appreciate that. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, you know, Dr. Carter, you were talking about the criminal justice system, and as a Black person, at best giving it the side eye, at worst not trusting it at all. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the stories that is also trending right now is coming out of Oklahoma, where you have a sheriff who was recorded talking about killing reporters and complaining about the obstacles to lynching Black people because you can't do that anymore. And this is a really, really, you know, horrible story. Sheriff Kevin McClarty in McCurtain County, Oklahoma. His defense is that it is illegal to record a conversation without the consent of someone. He's not talking about what he allegedly said. And there are more recordings that are expected to come out. But I think this really, you know, goes to the heart of the point, you know, that you were, you know, that you were making. Not to mention, Nikki, you know, I think I would, you know, keep you out of McCurtain County because you're a Black and a reporter.
For sure. But I think this is part of what Teresa was just talking about, the exhaustion of this, right? Of just existing and being a person with Black skin in this country where that is the offense. Just me waking up in the morning and walking outside is the offense. The fact that this sheriff can't abuse me and kill me via extrajudicial means anymore, that aggrieves him.
Yeah.
I would be curious how many Black people and other people of color that he has lied on or detained or disrespected or done all of these things. I would be very concerned.
Hold that point. Hold your point. I hate to cut you off. I've got to take a really quick break. I'll let you finish. I'll let Nikki comment on the other side. This is the Daily Drum Insight segment. The original Quiet Storm on WHUR is next with John Mons. I'm Harold Fisher. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. The dangers of being Black in America will continue in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're asking, is it safe just to be Black in America? My guests are journalist Nikki Mayo, editor-at-large for Black Women Unmuted, and Dr. Niambi Carter, associate professor in the School of Public Policy at the University of Maryland and author of American While Black, African Americans, Immigration, and the Limits of Citizenship. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Carter, finish your point. Dr. Carter, go ahead and finish your point.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just saying I would want someone to review the cases that came under this sheriff's purview because I would not trust that he has given any person of color, particularly Black people, a fair hearing in his county. So I would be very concerned, and I would want to be, if I was the district attorney or someone there, probably won't happen, but I would want to review the cases that came from this person, because a person who was lamenting the ability to murder people in some of the most horrific ways cannot be a public servant. He is disqualified.
Yeah. And suffice it to say, the Oklahoma's mayor has called for his resignation. The National Sheriff's Association has also called for Sheriff Kevin Clardy's resignation in the wake of this news. Nikki, your thoughts?
You always hear people say, okay, things were taken illegally. You have to have the party consent. These are all cute for legal things. And yes, we'll report them as such. But if I know that my neighbor, my sheriff, whoever is making comments like this, no, I don't want to go to your party. I don't want to sit in front of you. I don't want to be near you. I don't want my children near you. I don't want to have any aspect of you near my being. I've already heard, whether or not it's on the record or not, or fairly obtained or not, I've already heard that you harbor very potentially dangerous ideations about what should happen to Black people, the journalists. Anytime you say Black people should be hanged, I'm going to have a problem with that. And I think that sometimes folks forget that, yeah, you're a journalist. You're a whole human, though. So I cannot be a journalist tomorrow. I'll still be Black tomorrow. And if someone's saying some racist, bigoted things, they don't care what my occupation is.
Yeah.
I do have issue when publicly elected officials are like, well, that was taken without my consent. Well, guess what? Now we know what type of person you are. And they do have, you know, space to question, how do you govern? How do you prosecute? Frankly, how do you obtain anybody and put them behind bars? Or just how do you operate and move in this world? And I prefer not to be in these areas.
And it's a little difficult to put the toothpaste back in the tube.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Spin it all you want. That's called spinning. It's cute, but it's not taking and erasing what you've done.
Yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ken calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Ken, go right ahead. Ken, are you there? Ken, give us a call back if you can. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Now, here's the other side of this, and this is something that you talked about, Dr. Carter, or touched on briefly, because it's one thing where we have the situation in Missouri, but we have a situation here, right in our, not our backyards, in our front yard, where we had the deadly shooting at Stewart's Funeral Home, an institution in the District of Columbia, okay, where the person who was killed was Black. You had people who were wounded, and there have been no arrests, but the suspects could again very well be Black. There was a shooting at a strip club in Prince George's County about 2 weeks ago, where a security guard at the strip club was killed. And the video has come out that show the suspects, all of them young Black men. So it's not just, situations where it appears to have a racial component. In a lot of cases, it's us killing us.
Well, for sure. I mean, America has a gun problem and a race problem, right? Like, those things are not mutually exclusive. I think they can come together in some really volatile kind of ways. But, this is the reason why you have various kinds of community organizations that have been working for years to try to be peacekeepers in our communities locally, but also in other places like Chicago, where you see this all the time. I mean, my grandfather was buried at Stewart's, right? I mean, like a lot of our families, they've done the body, if you will, for our loved ones. And certainly, the number of shootings that you talk about that are happening. I mean, there was a child shot in Southeast the other evening. I mean, this is a problem. I mean, it's sort of like, when America catches a cold, we get the flu. So we are not immune to gun violence, right? I think we probably pay attention differently when the perpetrators are white. But let's be clear, Black people are just as concerned and just as aware and just as up in arms when it's a Black person doing the shooting. It just doesn't get the coverage in the same kind of way. And I think that's for numerous and sundry reasons. But certainly I think we have a gun problem in America, and our community is not immune from it. Just because we talk about the racial elements when it's a white perpetrator and a Black victim, it's the same when there are Black perpetrators and Black victims. It's the same feeling that we have with this young woman that got killed in the wrong driveway, right? I mean, by a white perpetrator, ostensibly. We have a gun problem. And when you overlay that with race and class and all other kinds of things, it becomes, I think, even more pronounced.
And, you know, that's the situation that I was about to bring up. Kaylin Gillis, 20-year-old, a white woman pulling up with her friends into a driveway there. This is in rural New York, upstate New York, just across the line from, Vermont, I believe. And she's there with her friends, and the suspect, Kevin Monahan, according to the reports today, fired a warning shot. There were no words exchanged. They had no signal. They had no GPS. They couldn't use their cell phones, realizing that they were wrong, according to the reports. She and her friends, they turned around, and he fired a warning shot because he claims that he feared for his life. And I think, you know, Nikki, it gets to the point where that defense, fearing for your life when the alleged perpetrator has their back to you and moving mm-hmm. in a direction that is away from you, that's starting to get just a tad bit old.
Yeah, I've had, like, racist managers say, I thought for my life. I'm like, you're, like, two times the size of me. Are you serious?
they were okay, afraid of you?
Of me. I'm a whole 5 feet at the most.
Okay? Yeah.
So, like, I think it's kind of like in, like, the white man dictionary or something. Like, you got to say, I was afraid for my life. And then that justifies you doing any type of violence against a marginalized community person. I think it's just written that, like, that way. But even with this, I mean, it was a white woman, for the love of God. So this person was just very gun-happy and felt that they had the right, because this is their property, to shoot warning shots. It's very, I'm from Southerners, okay? So I understand, like, we got our guns. So people like to say that they have their guns. That does not mean you have to be, you know, negligent with your gun use. There's fair and very responsible gun use that could happen. And what I'm starting to notice with all these excuses that we're getting with all these, well, I feared for my life. They were on my property, standing my ground. They're looking for all the coded language to say, I just need an excuse to shoot at you. This was a white woman, and I'm just sitting here like, this was somebody being crotchety and mean and wanted to shoot at people. You can shoot a warning shot, frankly, into the sky.
Yeah.
There you go. Warning. You don't have to shoot at anyone. I've gone to enough police barricades where I was supposedly in the safe area, air quotes on all of that. But at any given time, a stray bullet could have knocked any of us out, right? So I'm not buying the whole fearing for your life crap. That is just, I have to say that so that I can justify killing you or hurting you. It's almost like that comply, you should have complied or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's all just, I'm saying it out loud so I can hurt you. And with regular Joe Blow, not a law enforcement person, there are no body cameras to kind of like, let's run back the situation. And in a lot of these cases, they don't have Ring cameras or adjacent cameras. So you're doing these crimes because you've always had, frankly, you've always had a hard-on for hurting people. And that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Brandon calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes. How y'all doing today?
It's doing just fine. Go right ahead.
John. Yes, because I'm listening to the young lady speak about this gun violence, the race of people, you know what I'm saying? I told the young lady who answered the phone, you know, we don't even speak about the Dred Scott decision. The Dred Scott decision holds that a black man would have no rights that a white man would ever honor. That's the Constitution. And when were we, as people of color, were basically eligible to own guns? Because they wouldn't even put a gun in a man of color hand unless he went to the war. But now, in America, now we're talking about the killings that is going on about of color. These children out here, basically, now being taught how to transmit medical drugs. And then the drug leads to a gun. Okay, and all of this is because I think our Constitution upholds the black and white thing. you know, people of color, saying that a black man will have no respect, that a white man will have honor.
Yeah, but hold, but Brandon, and I get your point, but you know, in the broader scale of even this conversation, you could say that, you know, that's the case for the shooting in Missouri. You could say that that is the case relevant to Timothy Johnson, the man who was accused of shoplifting at Tyson's Corner Center, and he was unarmed. Yes, he was suspected of a crime. He ran, but he was shot and killed. And then, of course, you have even the situation in Akron, Ohio. Jaylen Walker, who was shot more than 40 times when he was running from, you know, a traffic stop. Now, the Jaylen Walker thing gets a little more complicated because he did take a shot at police, but when he ran from the car, his gun was in the car. Police say that they didn't know the gun was in the car, but my gracious, they shot the man more than, they shot him 47 times. And so, you know, there, yeah, I get your point, but then what about the situation with the shooting at the funeral home, you know, last week in, you know, in D.C. and all of the other crimes that are perpetrated in this city and many other cities, you know, young black men against, you know, other black people.
America has a gun
problem. They throw the curve, though, Mr. John. They throw the curve around it, though. You study their faces. They throw a curve around it, okay? And talking about they don't have nowhere to go. You know, these young guys are out in the streets doing nothing. But the population of homelessness of teenagers is most high.
Well, look, I don't want to get too much down into the weeds, but Brandon, thank you so much. Nikki, you were about to say something.
Yeah, America just purely has a drug problem. I mean, it's not a drug, wrong one. Gun problem. There's too much firearms. Well, yeah, that too, yes. Too many people have access to firearms, and this is how they're doing their conflict resolution. And we're all suffering as a result of it. Because every case you've given so far, the funeral home, let's be straight, people have, you know, inflamed emotions at funerals all the time, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
A strip club getting shot up, let's be straight. There's a reason why people always have those NIMBY conversations of, not in my backyard, mm-hmm. because they don't want the traffic that normally comes with a adult entertainment facility. There's always nuance to these things, but the fact that when it's time to show your anger and frustration, when it's time to lash out, people are not duking it out, folks. They're not having boxing matches and saying, meet me in that parking lot. And when they do say, meet me in the parking lot, they're going to their car and they're getting a gun. Everyone seems to have one, and we're mowing down numbers at a time. Like, we're making more mass shootings versus individual shootings, and I hate that that's the contrast. But there used to be just, okay, you were mad at Sam, you shot Sam, and then you left the scene, then you probably were going to face charges for shooting Sam. Now it's, I'm going to come back with something that's going to mow down Sam, whoever else is in the way at that time.
Yeah.
It's not safe outside.
Dr. Carter, I do want to go back to one of those cases mm-hmm. that I just mentioned, the Timothy Johnson case. Yesterday, a Fairfax County grand jury declined to indict the Fairfax County police sergeant who was accused of shooting him. Now, he was fired. That Sergeant Wesley Shiflett, he was fired by Chief Kevin Davis 29 days after the incident. Today, during an interview, Chief Davis said that while he respects the decision that the grand jury made, he said he stands by the firing because he said that Sergeant Shiflett violated policy. That policy being, you know, he basically shot an unarmed man.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we see this situation where a grand jury decided not to indict a white police officer for shooting an unarmed black man. And we can debate and discuss what was seen on the video the police body cam where he said he's reaching, and we can sit and debate that all, you know, this entire time. But it's just like the situation in Akron. Do you believe that this is going to be something that we're going to see? Moreover, grand juries are just going to say, okay, no indictment of these police officers.
Well, you guys are journalists, so you know most of the time grand juries don't indict police officers. That's actually more the exception than the rule. And I think in the case here, you know, two things can be true at the same time, right? This officer did something that should not have happened. He should not have shot this man, and he wasn't indicted. Now, he's probably free to be employed in another jurisdiction, which is very likely to happen, unfortunately. But I think we have to really be thoughtful about what we enforce as crimes. I get that shoplifting is a nuisance, but nobody should die because they shoplifted.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that should not be something that we are pursuing people over. That should not be something that we are certainly killing people over. In the same case with Jaylen Walker, I mean, you're talking about something with a tag that was improper. That man should not be dead because his tag was not in order. You took a picture of the tag, and then you write him a ticket, right? You've already got it on camera. You already have his tag number. Not that he's going to be difficult to find, but to let off 90-something shots in under 10 seconds and hitting this man 40-something times, that seems to me excessive. That is outsized, even if he did fire a bullet. To return fire in that manner just seems excessive. So I think we have to have a better conversation, not just about training these officers, but why are we enforcing these kinds of small, petty misdemeanor in this manner?
And certainly, you know, it's interesting that you should say that, because in jurisdictions around the country, not to mention in our area, that is, you know, the question in Montgomery County. There is a piece of legislation that is, you know, making its way through the Montgomery County Council about the impact of you know, traffic stops by police regarding headlights, expired tags, and we had that discussion, you know, on this program last month, where, you know, you had a retired police lieutenant who says, you know, you pull somebody off with an expired tag, often that leads to finding, you know, perpetrators of crime. The council member who had sponsored the legislation said that sometimes when you do these things, you end up with black and brown people getting shot by police. And so you have these arguments, you know, on both sides. And I think, you know, to your point, it is a discussion that we're going to continue to have, because there are two or three or four sides, you know, to that particular argument.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we're going to keep having it, right? Because as long as you send police officers into these situations where you've already told them they're dangerous, right? Because these kinds of traffic stops are dangerous and that kind of thing. You've already primed them to think about the danger. Then they see a black person or another person of color, they have already decided is more likely to be a criminal, and all of these other things. I think we are just continuing to add fuel to the fire. And this, again, is not because the training isn't working. It's the training that we're giving officers, I think, is leading to these more deadly outcomes. And whether it's shoplifting or, you know, an air freshener, which was Dante Wright in Minnesota,
right,
and all of these things, people
exactly
are dead over nothing. I mean, essentially nothing. These are not offenses they would have gone to jail for. These are not things that would have upended their lives, and they got a death sentence. And
so
I think we have to figure it out.
Yeah, go ahead, Nikki.
No, I'm finished.
So, is this the safety and traffic equity?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm actually happy that they did that. As a person that grew up, you know, teenager in the 90s, it was like the amount of, and I had a uniform on, for the love of God, the amount of times I would get stopped for dumb stuff. And I'm looking at, like, the different things that they're going to be taking a look at, like licensing, registration, certificate of title, insurance, even jaywalking. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of giving stop and frisk here, okay? it really is really frustrating because it's an easy excuse to profile us for certain types of people, whether it be black people, brown people. It probably won't be suburban white kids, I'm telling you that much.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy that they are taking steps to remedy a past ill, or I'm sorry, still a present ill, shucks. But it's very frustrating because you're giving these gateways and these opportunities to be vilified when you're pretty, like, you know, regular Joe citizen. And speaking of somebody who, you know how they do these officer-friendly campaigns, like, we're the good officers, we're here. I was literally on the Baltimore City Police Youth Choir. Like, that was a whole outreach effort to try to make Baltimore City kids like the cops, right? And it's like, you have to keep doing all these, like, you have to keep doubling back and doing officer-friendly moves when you could just stop doing this stuff on the front end and make it so that people do not see you as a threat and see you as a part of their community. So
yeah.
I'm glad that they're taking, you know, this type of step. I see it was introduced by a council member.
Will Jawando.
Thank you.
Yeah, Will Jawando.
Like, thank
yeah.
you. Like, thank you very much, and I wish more people would do it. Because you don't want kids in particular to grow up scared of the cops. But at the same token, the cops cannot be vilifying the kids the minute their eyes are no longer big, okay? It has to be a even relationship. And that's what's often missing. Because remember, I think maybe like the early 2000s or the late 90s, Prince George's cops had a bad rep for pulling people over.
Yeah.
Maryland State Police had a bad rep for pulling people over. Like, these reputations don't just come out of thin air. So you have to do a whole PR campaign strategy, and then you have to live by it. It can't be, you know, slaughtering motorists when you stop them for a tent on the window and then expect everyone in the community to be comfortable with you. So
but
is all coming together at a good time. I'm glad.
But let's talk, I think, about what I would say is the bigger issue. It's not about, you know, just the police, but it is about where this country is right now on the issue of race, particularly when you're talking about black people, where we're seeing literature by black people being attacked in public libraries, in school libraries, where we are seeing state leaders not wanting to address issues of social justice, where, to be quite honest, in some corners of this country, white people don't want to talk about black people. They don't want to talk about their history. They don't want to talk about their now. They don't want to talk about their future. They don't want to talk about any. They don't want to see anything.
They don't want to feel bad, Harold.
Well, yeah,
they don't want to feel bad.
Right, and I think that's part of it. But I think it's one thing where you have racism, when you have the othering. But when you are getting in, you get to a place where you are literally trying to disappear black people, then you, I would surmise that it could very well lead to the kinds of problems that we are, you know, seeing in this country, Derek Chauvin. Okay.
Yeah, the road to the White House in 2016 really kind of pushed a lot of this, okay? Like, it already existed in different parts of the country, but we got to see it regularly on our news, in our coverage for the election, where folks were openly racist, and it was okay for some awkward reason. And it just seemed to, like, snowball from there. So people are on this whole, I want America to go back to the way it used to be, and folks are like, what time frame are you talking about here? I have some questions about that, but whatever. And then when we get into these attacks on erasing black history, erasing the contributions of African Americans, and this revisionist history thing we're looking at right now with the attempt to get rid of CRT in all of its different shapes in every little facet of education, you can't erase away like Ruby Bridges and act like that didn't happen, or Selma and Bloody Sunday. You really cannot.
Sure,
and
you can.
Not teaching these sure, you, no, you cannot.
You know why you can? Because Tom Hanks on TikTok just yesterday said, "Why didn't I know about, the Tulsa, Oklahoma?"
Greenwood.
Yeah, he said he didn't know about it until until 2 or 3 years ago. Why wasn't he taught about the attack on Black Wall Street?
The Forrest Gump dude?
Yeah. Yeah, and he said when he found out, he got mad. Well, you know,
well, I got mad when I learned about Chet Hanks, but you know, we're still all living, okay?
And I guess my point is, you can do it because it has happened and it's happening again, and it seems that, you know, the people who care most about Black history are the people who made Black history, and
go
ahead.
All of this is about white comfort, right?
Yeah.
To Nikki's point, all of this is about white comfort. It has nothing to do with correcting the record, right? I mean, if we're going to be honest, then the facts are the facts, right? To Brandon's earlier point about Dred Scott is not in the Constitution, but this is the way that the Supreme Court interpreted the Constitution, that the Black man had no rights that the white man was bound to respect. When we do look at what's in the Constitution, there was a three-fifths clause. There was a clause in there protecting the importation of enslaved people, not necessarily Black, but we know who they were talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things are part of our founding. All of these things are part of our document. And what you have white people and some of their Black enablers saying is that this is not okay to teach because we don't like to talk about it, but yet we want to own all the great things. And this is a thing one of my colleagues said, Fareed Abdel-Noor at San Diego State. He said, you can't own just the good things. You can't just talk about the founding and throwing off, you know, the shackles of Great Britain. And you can't just talk about the high-minded ideals. You have to own history and all of it. You can't claim the nation, right, in all of its glory and not claim its failings, like Japanese internment, like enslavement, like Native American removal, like anti-Semitism, like the exclusion of women, like the forced sterilizations of Black women and indigenous women. All of that is part of who we are, and we can't talk about it. What they're essentially saying is, I can't talk about me. You can't talk about you and your lived experiences and how we move through the world. And that is criminal. And a country only does that when they are trying to get us very comfortable, more comfortable than we are now, with white supremacy and all of its machinations. Mm.
I think
we're not going back to that, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely not.
I think
we're not doing that.
That is a great place to end this conversation. We could talk about this for another hour. Unfortunately, we are out of time. Dr. Niambi Carter and journalist Nikki Mayo, always a pleasure to have both of you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harold.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, April 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.